from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Members of Congress make no effort to hide their disdain for the other side, even resorting to calls of violence. Also, there's a renewed push in light of the public education system to homeschool children. That's all coming up on the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. This summer, we've seen a significant crackdown in China on Christians, including demands that they renounce their faith. New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith joined Family Research Council President Tony Perkins on Tuesday to talk about that, as well as the 17th anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Here's Tony Perkins.
Chris, before we jump into what's happening in China, it was 17 years ago on this date that the continental U.S. suffered its greatest attack on the homeland by an external force. Is America safer today than we were 17 years ago?
I think we are safer. Homeland security, Americans' situation awareness has been so significantly increased. We have a lot of policies and a heck of a lot of goodwill on the part of people that if they see something, they say something. But unfortunately, our adversaries and people who are radical continue unabated, and many of those are thwarted, but we know that there's attempts being made all the time to kill and destroy Americans and property in the United States. So it's an ongoing battle, but in remembering the close to 3,000 who died 17 years ago, and Tony, as you know, another 2,000 have died since from that terrible fog of toxic materials churned up by the incident, by the attack, and about 10,000 have cancer. So there's an ongoing death toll attributable to 9/11. And I know many of the families, many of the widows and widowers and moms and dads who lost loved ones. And in my district, the numbers were huge. New Jersey lost 700.
Right, you're right across the border.
Right across the border. Many people worked in the city. And they are resolute. They are resilient. But they have broken hearts still.
Is there a risk, Congressman Smith, that as we are secure, which is a good thing, that we become complacent and we forget the risk that's out there?
There's always that risk, but I think the fact that we have so many very dedicated people, I mentioned the Department of Homeland Security, first responders, the idea behind vigilance as being the price of peace, has not been lost. So I don't think we've let our guard down. If anything, we continually recalibrate our efforts because the other side, the radicals, the hate-filled people who want to kill Americans and others of goodwill, continue to proliferate. So there's an ever-present reminder that the threat has been mitigated, but it is not in any way over.
It is not something we can never forget, and we must always be vigilant about. Congressman Smith, you have been a voice for the voiceless internationally when it comes to religious freedom and human rights. We've seen pictures coming out of China of Bibles being burned. We've gotten reports that Christians are being forced to sign statements renouncing their faith. I mean, this marks the first time, I think, since Mao's radical cultural revolution in the 60s and 70s that Christians have been compelled to make such declarations. Are we reaching a new level of hostility and persecution for Christians in China?
You know, we are, Tony, and I know you know this because you have been a great advocate for religious freedom. I was in China a few years ago, gave a speech on human rights after being barred for years, unable to get a visa. Xi Jinping gave an infamous speech in April of 2016 where he called for the sinicization of religion. In other words, all faiths, including Christians, must be subordinated to the Communist Party and toe the line for the Communist Party. And if you don't, you will be arrested, your church will be locked, and everything stolen. The pastors will be taken off where they will be usually beaten and tortured. And it's getting worse under Xi Jinping. He is nostalgic for Mao Zedong, often speaks of him in glowing words. And Mao Zedong, of course, is responsible for the mass death of tens of millions of Chinese people. So it's very troubling. And on all human rights, Xi Jinping has been in a race to the bottom with the North Koreans, for example, with the endemic use of or pervasive use of torture and all of these other horrible things that are imposed upon people. But religion, especially faith, Christians, even the Muslims, we had a hearing just a couple of weeks ago, Marco Rubio and I, on what they're doing with the Uyghurs, who are predominantly Muslim, a million who have been rounded up, and now we're seeing the same kind of repression imposed upon Christians, and it's been years in the making, but with the Zion Protestant House Church in Beijing being closed over the weekend, because they wouldn't put in surveillance cameras and kowtow to Big Brother in that way. And all of these house churches that are being desecrated, the people are being harassed, and as you said, forced renunciations of faith, it's just a further deterioration of religious freedom. And we need to do more about it. The good news is, as you know, the State Department, the administration's Ministerial on Religious Freedom in July made China one of its priorities. That was a good thing. But I do think we need to be looking at the powers that the state and the White House have vested into them by the International Religious Freedom Act to deny visas pursuant to that law. And there are other laws like Magnitsky as well where that could be used. And as you know, because you helped us get it passed, the Frank Wolf International Religious Freedom Act in 2016 established a specially designated persons list so we know who are being sanctioned. Well, we haven't seen that yet. So my hope is that people are being sanctioned, hopefully in a methodical, accurate way. And when I say people, I mean government officials who right. are doing these terrible deeds to people who happen to be Christian and faithful and full of joy. They pray for their country. I've been there many times on human rights trips. The Chinese Christians are an extraordinary group of people who live the gospel, and for that they are persecuted.
And we have an obligation here as Christians in America, but as Americans who recognize that religious freedom is a human right, not just an American right.
Exactly.
We have the power and the ability to advocate for them. And, you know, we do a lot of economic activity and discussions and treaties and such with China and other countries. I'm hopeful, and I'm seeing evidence that more and more under this administration, religious freedom is a priority consideration in all of our foreign policy.
It definitely is, and of course, with our Sam Brownback, our new ambassador at large, he has taken it very seriously as well. I mean, the job is huge, and it needs to have all hands on board. As a matter of fact, when we did the Frank Wolf International Religious Freedom Act in 2016, I was the sponsor of it, named after that great champion, Frank Wolf, when we did it.
Who by the way, we will be recognizing at this year's Values Voters Summit at the gala with our leadership award for his vision 20 years ago to actually author the first International Religious Freedom Act, which has since been modified and renamed after him. But we'll be honoring him at this year's gala.
Well, Frank Wolf is a champion and has made an enormous difference in the lives of all believers of all belief systems, including Christians, so it's great that you'll be doing that. But we do have tools that need to be used. They were not used effectively in the previous administration. I held the hearings on that lack of enforcement of current law
right.
at the time. So now, you know, we're seeing efforts made, but there needs to be more done, frankly.
Right. Honestly, I don't think the tools that were put in the tool chest by Congress 20 years ago have been fully utilized at all under any administration.
Oh, I agree with you totally. And that's why, you know, with deterioration, especially in China, against so many wonderful people who just want to pray, live out their faith, and frankly, they pray for their country. That's been one of the biggest
right.
takeaways I've had when I'm there. These are very loyal Chinese people, and yet, you know, they love their country. They are at odds, sadly, with their government, but they obviously just try to live out their gospel. And for that, they are beaten. They are denied all kinds of benefits under that society, including
right.
upward mobility, in terms of the economic situation. And it's pervasive. And minors can't be taught certain things about God. Suffer the little children to come unto me. I mean, Xi Jinping prevents that from happening in so many instances throughout China. And so we need to, this is an internationally recognized human right. This is not an American value only. It is universal. And so I think we need to ratchet up significantly the pressure on China, and economic sanctions are one way of doing it.
All right, Congressman Chris Smith, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for all you do on behalf of believers around the world.
And thank you as well.
You can find out more about Congressman Smith, as well as a host of other religious liberty battles, when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the Donate button. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want to preserve and protect religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Sam Brownback, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pompeo, Laura Ingraham, Oliver North, Dana Lash, Todd Starnes, and Mark Levin. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. You probably remember earlier this summer when White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders was forced out of a restaurant by an angry business owner, and more recently, Representative Maxine Waters calling for mobs to go after people from the administration. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about these calls for violence and a survivor of a violent attack himself is Majority Whip Steve Scalise.
Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to be back with you.
Well, we were discussing earlier about the knife-wielding attacker in California that went after the GOP candidate. Of course, was refreshing my listeners' memory about the shooting that took place a little over a year ago, that you were one of the targets at the Republican lawmakers' baseball practice. So this is obviously this, and we've had the shooting here at the Family Research Council. So we completely understand
right.
that these words lead to actions, and it's important we get ahead of it. And you're calling on those on the left, like Maxine Waters and others, who are inciting violence, to denounce this type of speech.
Absolutely, Tony. I mean, there's no place for it. And, you know, what I've said is, look, if somebody did this on the right, all of us should be calling and denouncing it, Republican and Democrat. It shouldn't be a partisan thing. And we're denouncing what we're seeing. And unfortunately, we see it on the left over and over now. And you don't hear any leaders on the left denouncing it. And like you said, some are encouraging it. And it's got to stop. And they've got to be called on to denounce it just like we are.
Have any of your colleagues on the other side of the aisle responded to your challenge to them for them to do this?
I really haven't seen them calling this out publicly. And each time it happens, you know, the mainstream media, if there was any kind of attack in the past, I mean, when the Tea Party was starting, they would hope that it was somebody from the Tea Party and to already start asking members on the Republican side, do you denounce it if it's a Tea Party person? And then it would turn out it wouldn't even be a Tea Party person. In some cases, it was a Democrat. But the media was already hoping to get us on the record, and you don't see that from the media on these incidents. And it shows that double standard that I think people are furious with.
Yeah, and I was talking about that earlier, and I know you would agree with this because you and I have talked about it. There's no room for violence in our republic, not in the public square.
Nope.
You cannot have a republic.
There's not.
And it just won't work.
And our founders wanted a heated debate. They wanted an environment where you could question your own government. And in many countries, you still to this day can't do that. In America, it's encouraged by the First Amendment protection, but violence is never an acceptable way to resolve political disputes. You resolve them at the ballot box. Look, we're having an election in just a few weeks, a major election, and that's how we resolve these differences. But if you lose the election, you don't resort to violence.
And it's a reminder of why we all need to participate in the process, because that is how we, in part, that's how we voice our concerns and the direction we want to see our country go. And it just – the left could not handle what the American people said in the last election, and they're still fighting it 2 years later.
Well, Tony, the thing that the left – they don't understand why President Trump won. I mean, Donald Trump ran – on a Reagan-esque platform, a very conservative agenda. There was the opening on the Supreme Court with Scalia's tragic death, and he said, these are the people I would appoint to the court. You know, they tried to criticize him on that. Everything was out there. The public knew what the choices were, and they overwhelmingly chose Donald Trump, and in fact shocked people in states like Michigan and Wisconsin, quickly winning Ohio and Florida, winning Pennsylvania, and then winning places that we hadn't won in a long time, because he actually ran and stood for true conservative principles, and he's following through on them. And so
right.
If you're angry about the fact that the president's doing what he promised to do, we should be celebrating that. And clearly there are people that didn't agree with him, but they had their opportunity. They're going to have another chance in 2020. And you're seeing this ridiculous tryout, in essence, for Democratic nominee for president. You saw it starting in the hearings on Kavanaugh with Cory Booker and Kamala Harris competing against each other for who could be the most bizarre on some of the comments they were making, as opposed to trying to question Justice Kavanaugh's record, which is a great record, and he handled himself, by the way, incredibly well with the ridiculous protests. And ultimately, in the next few weeks, he's going to be on the Supreme Court and doing this country a great service.
You know, I think we just came up with a new title for the next reality TV show covering the United States Senate, Who Can Be the Most Bizarre? And I think we could have quite a few people try out. But anyway, we won't go down that path. I would add one element to what you described with the Trump platform being conservative, because you're absolutely right. It was a conservative, Reagan-esque platform. But I think what drove people to support Trump, in addition to that, because, you know, he was untested. Nobody really knew. No, and I can speak personally on this. But I think what really drove conservatives to Donald Trump and helped him secure the election victory was Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, because people knew what they would do. And they scared people into the arms of Donald Trump. And unlike what I've seen in the past, he has, as you said, systematically fulfilled his promises that he made on the campaign trail.
Yeah, standing up for life, appointing justices that will actually go and interpret and stand up for the Constitution, reducing the size of government, reducing regulations, cutting taxes, fighting for the forgotten men and women of this country, the Reagan Democrats that we had lost, Tony. And for a few decades now, you've seen it dropping away. And that's why we were losing states like Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania. And he won them back by saying, I'm going to fight for you. And he didn't shy away from his wealth. He said, look, I've made a lot of money, but I'm going to fight for the people that haven't had their shot at the American dream and deserve it. And he's delivering. And you're seeing more opportunity. I mean, look, there's more people that there are more jobs available than there are people looking for jobs. Anybody that wants to become a part of what's great about the American dream can go get it now. And they are getting it in millions. And we ought to be celebrating that and doing more of that. So that's what's at stake in November.
Before I let you go, Stephen, I appreciate you joining us. I know you're busy. What can we expect to see moving forward in these final days of Congress before we turn to the election? What can we expect here in Capitol Hill?
Well, we are starting tomorrow. There's going to be a bill moving through on tax cuts 2.0, so the next round of tax cuts, and really making the tax cuts permanent for families. Because of Senate rules, some of the tax cuts were permanent, some were temporary. We want to say, look, these are working well. It's helping rebuild our middle class. For those hardworking families that are enjoying more money in their paycheck, let's make certainty by making it permanent. And then we've got to fund the basic priorities of the government, rebuilding our military. That's all going to happen in the next few weeks. And there's a lot of contrast that we're going to then have when we go home in November. We want to continue this economic growth, rebuilding our military and our economy, standing up for life. Nancy Pelosi wants to repeal your tax cuts. She wants to literally move to socialism. And this idea of abolishing ICE, Tony, getting rid of the border agents. You're a former law enforcement officer. You know how important it is to keep our community safe, and ICE agents are doing that.
Right.
They want to get rid of ICE. So the country needs to see not only what we stand for, but what they would do if they got the majority. And, you know, go listen to Maxine Waters and listen to Nancy Pelosi. They're telling you what they would do. And I think it's good that we listen to them, because it's pretty scary when you think about what that would look like if they won the majority in November.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you for challenging the rhetoric on the other side. I do think we need to be reminding folks they need to dial it down. We need to be civil. We can passionately disagree, but we need to do so in a civil way that does not incite violence. So we'll be tracking this. I'll be interested to see if any of them take you up on the challenge.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it.
To find out more about Congressman Steve Scalise or the Values Voters Summit coming up next week, just head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Are you ready to take a stand? Well, now you can with FRC's new Stand Firm mobile app, which allows you to stay engaged and informed on the most important issues facing our country. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on issues of faith, family, and freedom with just the tap of a screen. Listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and much more. Join Christians across America as we stand firm together. Visit frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. We've talked about the public school system for years now, and recently FRC's own Kathy Roos wrote an article about how long it will take to fix the system and who will pay the penalty for that wait. Here's Washington Watch Live host, Tony Perkins.
Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, you are sounding the alarm. This is not just something to say, all right, we got a problem. You're saying this problem is acute and you need to do something about it.
Right, and the it is. I'm writing in the stream column is about a new book. The authors are Mary Rice Hassan and Teresa Farnan, and their book Get Out Now is kind of what I've been trying to say for the last couple of years. But actually, I haven't really had the guts to make this the centerpiece of what I've been saying on the threat of public schools, and that is just you got to get out. These authors conclude that you must take your kids up now, that it is impossible to correct the wrongs within the lifetime of your children in public schools. In other words, it's not a hopeless situation. We can save the public schools, but we can't save them within the time frame that our kids, if you've got kids in schools now, they won't be saved in time. And so save the souls of your kids while we're trying to save the public schools, but it's not going to happen that fast. And so they say you've got to take them out now.
I agree. We should not sacrifice our kids to try to save the schools. We can save the schools another way. We can have parents run for school boards. We can be a part of elections. But we cannot afford to allow our kids. Explain once again. I know you've been on here many times. We've talked about this many, many times. But I don't think we can talk about it enough. The dangers of these government schools. What's happening in the classroom?
Well, you can judge a tree by its fruit. And so what we are seeing, the fruit of government schools today, is that kids are coming out thinking the worst possible things about America, being ashamed to be Americans. They're coming out with a lost face and a new embrace of progressive ideology, and they're coming out not even knowing if they're male or female. And this is all because the education bureaucrats, not the good rank-and-file teachers, of whom there are many, but the top-down education bureaucrats have turned public education into a political indoctrination system. And so consider the fact that for 13 years, your children, most of their waking hours are spent with a group of people at these government schools. These are tremendously impressionable times on the part of growing kids. And if they are being indoctrinated into, you know, hate America first, into this radical transgender ideology and in being embarrassed or being mortified about their faith in God and in Christ, which we have some examples about in this book, then they're going to come out after 13 years being indoctrinated. They're not going to know up from down or right from wrong, and that's what we're seeing. It's a tragic thing, and it's different than it used to be when we were in school. I went to public schools. People who went to public schools might think, well, we survived. Oh, it's a very different world today.
So, Kathy, parents listening out there saying, okay, yeah, I get it, there's problems. What are my options?
Well, and that's, I guess, why I've been a little shy about saying, get them out, because I know people feel stuck. You know, not everybody can afford expensive private schools, expensive religious schools. These are all expensive. And public schools should be for everyone. They are meant to be for everyone. And so in a sense, it kind of feels like you're abandoning, you know, you're walking away from something. But I have to say, especially after reading this book, I agree with the authors. The options really are trying to find affordable private solutions or homeschooling. Now, let me say just a word about homeschooling. Of course, homeschooling requires the logistics and the financial wherewithal where you can have a parent who is at least largely home, and many families feel they can't do that. But what I will say about homeschooling as an option is that over the last decade or two, homeschooling co-ops around the country have developed into such really comprehensive systems that I urge people to take a second look at homeschooling. It's not like you were when you were kids.
Yeah, there are a lot of resources out there. Kathy Roos, as always, great to have you on, and appreciate your continued interest in education.
Thank you, Tony.
Us.
Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.